Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to ST Engineering's full year 2020 results briefing. We will begin today's briefing with a presentation by our Group CFO, Mr. Cedric Foo. Following that, we will invite our management to join us for a Q&A session. Without further delay, I'll hand over to Cedric. Cedric, please.
A very good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the ST Engineering full year 2020 results briefing. Let me also extend a warm welcome to those who are dialing in through webcast. The agenda for this morning is the group highlights, followed by outlook, and we'll leave you to go through the appendices. First, the group highlights. May I refer you to slide number four? The COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the group because of demand reduction, supply chain challenges, and workforce disruptions. The group's aerospace sector is affected more than the other sectors. In line with our revenue guidance, the group provided in its third quarter 2020 market update, the group recorded revenue of 7.2 billion for full year 2020, which was 9% lower year-on-year. We have guided at 10% at that time. The group's profit from operations of 560.9 million dollars for full year 2020 was 17% lower year-on-year. Profits from operations, you will find, is a new term that we are using here. It replaces the term EBIT, which we have been using in past years. The figure shown in the top right box, 560.9 million, is operating profit before other income and share of associates. Hence, profit from operations is a better description, and we have adopted it now and going forward. Our profit before tax stood at 534.4 million, which was 23% lower year-on-year. The second half of 2020, as you know, was more impacted than the first, as the pandemic took hold across the world. Lastly, we ended the year with net profit of 521.8 million, which was 10% lower year-on-year. Slide number five. This slide shows the revenue and net profit movement between 2019 and 2020. First, on the left-hand side. In full year 2020, the group recorded 7.2 billion of revenue, or 9% lower compared to the 7.9 billion in full year 2019. The decrease was largely attributable to our aerospace sector, with its revenue decreasing by 737 million. Revenue for the rest of our sectors registered an increase of 27 million. Net profit, which is on the right-hand side. In full year 2020, the group recorded a net profit of 522 million, or 10% lower year-on-year. This was a result of, one, impairments and unfavorable fair value changes of associates, in line with the poorer business outlook for some lines of business impacted by COVID-19. This impairment amounted to 54 million, or 10 percentage points during the year. Secondly, our shipbuilding business. The loss from the shipbuilding business widened by 15 million, or 3 percentage points, due to project losses in the U.S. for contracts secured in the trough of the marine industry to cover fixed cost. And thirdly, a positive 13 million due to a combination of government support, cost reduction initiatives, and offset by the effects of COVID-19 and others. This figure also includes provisions for onerous contracts for various projects, some of which as a result of poorer outlook arising from COVID-19. If the outlook improves this year and we expect a partial recovery, one would expect not to see so many onerous contracts for 2021. This brought our net profit for full year 2020 to 522 million, or 10% lower than 2019. Slide six. Aerospace contributed 38% of group revenue, electronics 32%, land system 19%, marine 10%, and others 1%. In terms of breakdown between commercial and defense, defense revenue declined from 5.6 billion in 2019 to 4.6 billion in 2020. Whilst defense revenue grew from 2.3 billion to 2.6 billion, as defense is less affected by COVID-19. By customer locations, Asia constituted 53%, the US 24%, Europe 17%, and others 6%. Slide 7. In the fourth quarter of 2020, aerospace and electronic sectors collectively secured 1.3 billion worth of new contracts. For the full year 2020, these two sectors collectively secured 5.7 billion in new contracts. This 5.7 billion value excludes contracts secured by the land systems and marine sectors. Slide 8. The group ended the year with an order book balance of 15.4 billion, slightly higher than the 15.3 billion as of end of 2019. This is despite order cancellations of about $1 billion, of which the bulk came from the aerospace sector, and certain contracts were deferred and only finalized in January 2021. Notwithstanding these reasons, our order book remains robust at 15.4 billion as of end 2020, with about 5.3 billion to be delivered this year. Slide number 9. This slide shows the breakdown of revenue by sectors. For full year 2020, aerospace revenue was 2.71 billion, down by 21%. This sector was most impacted by COVID-19 as a result of the weak aviation sector. The revenue from electronics and land systems dropped marginally by 1 to 2%. Marine sector recorded a revenue of 710 million, which was 10% higher than 2019. Others include our subsidiary InnoSparks, which generated higher revenue in 2020 as a result of its sale of masks. All in, the group recorded a total revenue of 7.2 billion, which was 9% lower than 2019 and in line with our guidance. Slide 10, net profit. The group's aerospace sector recorded a net profit of 192.9 million, which is 28% lower than 2019. The aerospace sector experienced a more pronounced impact brought on by COVID-19 as its customers were in the aviation industry. With a poorer business outlook resulting from COVID-19, some of its lines of business recorded impairment charges. The impact of COVID-19 was partially mitigated by cost reduction measures and government support, which the sector received. However, excluding government support, the aerospace sector would still be in the black. Our electronics sector recorded a profit of 203.9 million, which was 11% higher than full year 2019, mainly helped by cost reduction measures and government support. Land system sector recorded a profit of 101.4 million, which was 31% higher than 2019, due primarily to increased vehicle production in Singapore, cost reduction measures, and government support. This was partly offset by weaker performance from its associates and its US specialty vehicle businesses. Our marine sector recorded a profit of 28.3 million, which was 45% lower than that of the year before. As I said, the shipbuilding business in the US registered losses in several projects, which were priced and contracted at the trough of the marine industry. In summary, the group recorded a net profit of 521.8 million, which was 10% lower than 2019. Slide 11, net profit margin. The group's full-year net profit margins on the right-hand side of this slide was 7%, which is similar to 2019. And a large part of it was contributed by self-help, cost reduction measures, as well as government support. Aerospace sector came in 1 percentage point lower than 2019. Electronics came in 1 percentage point higher, while land systems came in 2 percentage point higher. The net profit margin for marine sector was 4 percentage points lower due to project losses in the U.S. Slide 12. The major changes in the balance sheet are current liabilities. Our current liabilities as of end of 2020 stood at $3.9 billion. This was down from the $5.45 billion as a result of the repayment of our short-term U.S. commercial paper and some bank loans, which were used as a bridge for the acquisition of MRAS and NewTek, which is now named iDirect. Non-current liabilities, on the other hand, increased to $3.09 billion as of end of 2020 from $1.58 billion as of end of 2019. This increase was largely due to the bond issue in April 2020, as well as higher non-current contract liability balances from advances received from customers. Apologies for the technical hitch. Next, slide 13, statement of cash flow. Net cash from operating activities was very strong at $1.53 billion compared to $590 million in 2019. The difference was largely a result of higher advance payments received from customers, as well as favorable working capital movements. The group's net cash used in investing activity stood at $295 million as at end 2020, compared to $1.27 billion in 2019. The group made major acquisitions in MRAS and iDirect Europe in 2019. In 2020, the group recorded a cash outflow from financing activities of $959 million, primarily due to the dividend payment, repayment of commercial papers and bank loans, and offset by the bond issue. In 2019, the group had a drawdown of short-term bank loans and issued U.S. commercial papers to fund the acquisition of MRAS and iDirect Europe. Slide 14. The board has announced a final dividend of 10 cents per ordinary shares, subject to shareholders' approval at the forthcoming annual general meeting. The dividend will be payable on 7th of May this year. Full year 2020 interim dividend was 5 cents, and with this 10 cents of final dividend, it brings our total dividend for the year to 15 cents. The final dividend payable in 2021 can be adequately funded out of past year's retained earnings. The retained earnings was $1.4 billion, or equivalent to 44.9 cents per share as at the end of 2020 at the group level. Before I leave you with the CEO's comments and message, I'd like to discuss slide 16. The group expects a reduction in government support of about $250 million. So in 2020, we received about $350 million. This year, we expect to receive about $100 million. So the reduction is $250 million. We target to offset this $250 million amount through cost savings and partial business recovery, which we expect, and lower impairments, which we also expect as a result of this recovery that we are forecasting. The $180 million targeted cost savings includes reduced manpower costs and productivity measures. These include reduced contract labor, reduced outsourced contractors, retirements, natural attrition, and reduced overtime, especially in the earlier part of this year, until demands pick up. These measures were taken across our global network, not just in Singapore, and will be manifested in both the cost of goods sales and OPEX for this year. And many of these items, I would say most of these items, were already acted upon in 2020 and will flow through into 2021 with full year effect. Hence, we are confident that the targeted savings of $180 million will be achieved. Finally, the CEO's message. which we will leave you to read for maybe half a minute. Now, the next topic I have is our external financial reporting framework. And this is necessitated because we have reorganized the company and in line with the FRS 1.8, we would like to acquaint you to how we will be reporting our results from first half of this year onwards. So may I refer you to slide number 2? To recap, the new organization structure that we have put in place from January this year is to align with our growth strategy, which we communicated to investors as early as March 2018. And these are, 1, to strengthen our core business, 2, to grow our smart city business, and 3, to also grow our international defense business. Our new organization is structured through 2 clusters. First, commercial, and 2, defense and public security cluster. This is so as to deepen customer focus, accelerate domain expertise, and position the group for international growth. Slide 3. Within each cluster, there are business areas with specific domain expertise. Under the commercial cluster, the business areas are commercial aerospace, which is one of our main core business, 2, urban solutions, and 3, satellite communications. Under defense and public security, the business areas are 1, digital systems and cyber, 2, land systems, and 3, marine, and 4, defense aerospace. Both clusters will be supported by the Group Engineering Center and the Group Technology Center, as well as the group HQ functions and shared services to derive synergies across the group. Slide 4. The principles that we have abided to is firstly to reflect the management structure, how we steward and how we place accountability to the various segments. 2, to enable analysts to make comparison to peer group companies of how we are performing. And 3, to provide the performance of each of the 3 segments. This is consistent with the requirements of the accounting standard. Slide 5. As such, we'll be reporting 3 segments. 1, commercial aerospace. 2, we will be reporting urban solutions and satellite communications together as a segment. And finally, defense and public security as a 3rd segment. Commercial aerospace is one of our core businesses and is distinct from our smart city business. Analysts have often asked, who is the president of smart city? I mean, when we were presenting our Investor Day materials, I think now we have a smart city segment, which is really urban solutions and SATCOM. Defense and public security cluster serves our local defense customers, but also other government agencies. So it's not just local defense. It also has public safety and security, and many other agencies are served by this particular unit. But in order to preserve synergies within the marine and land system sectors, they were largely placed under this cluster, so we are not very purist about it, and we are taking a practical approach to this reorganization. And as you know, both marine and land have substantial commercial businesses, and so does digital systems. So in other words, the defense and public security cluster should not be seen as non-commercial cluster. Additionally, the defense and public security cluster do not only comprises businesses in Singapore, but also comprises a large footprint overseas, like work we do for the U.S. Army, U.S. Coast Guards, and so forth. So let me repeat. Defense and public security is not just non-commercial. Yeah, there are commercial elements in it. And it's not just defense, but also public safety and security serving other government agencies other than our local defense customer. It also has footprint outside of Singapore and not just Singapore alone. Slide 6. Beneath these 3 segments, there will be 9 sub-segments. And under commercial aerospace, we have Aero MRO, which you are very familiar with. Aerostructure and systems, which is really the OEM part of the aerospace segment. And aviation asset management, which is really your aircraft leasing, engines, and asset management. Under urban solutions and satellite communications, you have all your urban solutions and SATCOM lines of businesses falling beneath it. And under defense and public security, digital systems and cyber, land systems, marine and defense aerospace. So in all, there are 9 sub-segments. Slide 7. This slide shows the transition from the previous reporting framework to the new reporting framework. The sub-segments are color-coded. So, for example, defense, aerospace, digital systems and cyber, land systems and marine, colored in green on the left, will move to defense and public security on the right. So the first 2 segments, based on 2020 numbers, would be roughly 50%, whilst the DPS, defense and public security segment, will be the other 50%. Commercial aerospace and urban solutions and SATCOM were in the trough of their business cycle in 2020 due to COVID. And therefore, these percentages, the 50 and 50, would move and change over time. Slide 8. In terms of financial disclosures, the group financials will remain unchanged and will include the full suite of financial statements. Business segments will include revenue, EBIT, the new EBIT that is purely earnings before interest and tax, but after other income and associates, and segment assets and liabilities, the balance sheet side of it. Sub-segments will include just revenue. Now, we have attached an appendix in the deck that we have distributed so as to enable you to find out what products and services falls under each of these 9 segments. So I'll leave you to browse through them. If you have any questions on the new framework, feel free to clarify with us, and we'll be happy to take those questions. Otherwise, thanks for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Cedric. May I now invite the panelists to join us at the head table for Q&A, please? I'd like to introduce the panelists for today. They are Mr. Vincent Chong, Group President and CEO, Mr. Cedric Foo, the Group CFO, our Group Chief Operating Officers, Mr. Lim Sergi and Mr. Ravinder Singh, Mr. Jeffrey Lam, President, Head of Aerospace Sector, Dr. Lee Xiang Long, President, Head of Land Systems, and Mr. Ng Seng Chan, President, Head of Marine. For best safe management practice within this meeting room, please proceed to the standing mics lined up along the aisle to ask your question. Kindly state your name before asking your question. For webcast participants, please click on the raise your hand icon if you have a question and you will be placed in the queue accordingly. I'll now hand over the mic to Vincent to deliver his remarks before we begin our Q&A. Vincent, please.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining our full year 2020 results briefing, those here as well as those who join us webcast. We started 2020 positively, but the growth momentum was impacted when COVID-19 pandemic disrupted economic activities from the early months of 2020. Since the beginning, we acted decisively to mitigate the impact on our business while maintaining a safe work environment for our employees and business continuity for our customers. We were impacted broadly in the areas of reduction in customer demand, supply chain challenges, as well as workforce disruptions. Against this backdrop, our revenue was down 9% year-on-year and in line with what we guided in our third quarter market update. Our aerospace was most impacted due to the weak aviation industry as passenger air travel was curtailed. The group PBT was impacted negatively by impairment of intangible assets and fair value changes of associates in line with poorer business outlook for some of our business due to COVID-19. Further, our U.S. shipbuilding business registered project losses in the execution of several projects that were contracted and priced at the trough of the marine industry. The PBT drop was also impacted by lower group revenue, mitigated by savings from productivity and cost reduction initiatives and government support. On government support, we recognized about $350 million at PBT level in 2020. This is in line with what we shared last August, that the government support would be more than $300 million for full year 2020. The group net profit similarly saw a reduction, but alleviated by the non-taxability of the Singapore government job support scheme, and came in at 10% lower year on year. Let me now turn to our sector performance. At Aerospace, all its business groups were negatively impacted by the pandemic. Both revenue and net profit came in lower year on year, while profitability was propped up by cost-saving initiatives and government support. The sector would still have been slightly profitable in 2020 without government support. Our aerospace sector's relative resilience is driven by our global diverse portfolio, which includes PTF, or passenger to freighter conversion, our ability to securitize our engine leasing portfolio, as we shared with you last year. We also implemented cost reduction and productivity measures to mitigate the impact of COVID-19. As we all know, this is against the backdrop of a very challenging aviation industry that the world has seen. While there are signs of gradual pickup in MRO work, we will continue to focus on cost management while keeping close watch on market developments. The silver lining is in the air cargo segment, which shows resilience in part driven by the precipitous fall in passenger demand, which took out belly capacity for cargo. To this end, we have achieved several milestones in our freighter conversion business in time to help airlines breathe new life into underutilized aircraft, while addressing market shortage in air freighter capacity at a time when the belly cargo load in passenger aircraft is greatly reduced. In September, we redelivered the head of version A321 passenger to freighter converted aircraft to launch customer Vel Air in September. In November, we set up a A321 passenger to freighter conversion line in Guangzhou, China. That's in addition to the one that we have in Singapore. We will soon set up a new line at our facility in Mobile, Alabama, USA. Also in November, we opened a second line for our Boeing 767-300 passenger to freighter conversion in Singapore to support Boeing in its conversion program. Apart from converting retired passenger aircraft to freighters, we also helped to temporarily turn passenger aircraft into cargo planes. We worked with Scoot to launch its first cargo plane in August by removing seats to introduce cargo carrying capacity to the cabin interior. As for our MRO business, we continue to expand our service offerings. We added CFM56-7B and V2500 engine nacelle MRO capability to MRAS aftermarket solutions to provide more integrated solutions in nacelles to our customers. In doing so, we have built up an engine nacelle MRO presence in the US at the same time. Let's move to electronics. Revenue for the sector was 2% lower year on year, largely because of COVID-19, impacting project milestones and delivery schedules due to travel and movement restrictions imposed in countries we serve, as well as supply chain disruptions. Its net profit was up 11%, largely helped by savings from cost reduction initiatives and government support. The sector did better in the second half of 2020, consistent with past performance of having a stronger second half, but also because its businesses experienced partial recovery amid COVID-19 in the last few months. Our Satcom businesses in Europe and the US are fully integrated, and as an enlarged Satcom group contributed positively to the sector revenue, even though demand fell for ground infrastructure for some Satcom customers, especially those in the aviation and maritime segments. In 2020, we were about break-even on iDirect Europe or NewTech, as it was known when we closed the transaction in October 2019, at a net profit level. Now, on Land Systems, its revenue was comparable partially due to lower specialty vehicle business, offset by stronger defense sales. Its net profit was up 31%, helped by savings from cost reduction initiatives that also resulted in lower operating expenses and as well as government support. The sector continues to pursue opportunities in international defense business. Now that we have reorganized, our new structure will enable us to go to market more effectively. Having said that, defense programs have long gestation periods and we'll continue to focus on segments where our niche capabilities can give us advantage. Locally, we are focused on the production and supply of the Hunter Armored Fighting Vehicle. Turning to Marine, its revenue was up 10% year-on-year, mainly due to higher contribution from U.S. shipbuilding, offset by lower revenue contribution from Singapore as yacht activities were disrupted by COVID-19. Earlier part of, towards the mid of last year, especially during the circuit breaker period. Despite higher revenue, the sector's net profit was down 45%, largely because our U.S. operations incurred cost overruns in several vessel constructions. These projects were contracted and priced low at the trough of the marine industry in 2018 to cover fixed overheads. In addition, operating costs increased due to COVID-19 disruption on yacht operations and workforce. Meanwhile, we are working hard to better manage our resources and control of costs in the U.S. operations. We are also focused on delivering existing contracts in the U.S. and ensure that the shipyard and its workforce can successfully construct the Polar Security Cutter, or PSC, which remains profitable. Now, on new contracts and order book, notwithstanding a slowdown, our aerospace and electronics sectors secured new contracts of $821 million and $516 million, respectively, for the fourth quarter. Our contracts, new contracts secured by aerospace in the fourth quarter included a five-year airframe heavy maintenance contract to support an international air cargo carrier of multiple fleet types, and a four-year airframe heavy maintenance contract to support a North American Airlines Boeing's 777 fleet. Our A330 passenger-to-freighter conversion program also gained traction as we sign up several new customers and more orders in the last quarter. As for the electronics sector, apart from securing new contracts locally in the fourth quarter, the team picked up the pace of new contract wins outside of Singapore as some customers resume business activities. These contracts included smart city-related projects in various cities for solutions in smart mobility and Internet of Things, such as smart lighting and smart water metering, as well as in Satcom ground systems. Together with other contracts won but not disclosed, and after adjustments of revenue delivery and project cancellations of $1 billion, as Cedric presented, largely for aerospace, we ended the year with a robust order book of $15.4 billion, or slightly higher than 2019 year-end order book level. And that's despite the challenges we faced in 2020 as a result of COVID-19 pandemic. The expected delivery of $5.3 billion from the order book in 2021 continues to provide a healthy revenue pipeline this year. And this would be the last set of results briefing that is sector-centric. For 2021 results, we will present our financials in a new reporting framework, which Cedric has earlier presented. It is important for me to reiterate that the reorganization doesn't change who we are. As only the customer-facing part of the group is reorganized, our new structure is designed to enable better execution of our global growth strategy of strengthening our core businesses and pursuing growth in smart city and international defense business. The new reporting framework is based on how we drive management stewardship and accountability for our leaders' respective areas. Now, going to 2021, we'll continue to focus on business recovery, even though we expect it to be uneven across the industries we participate in. The aviation industry remains subdued and is unlikely to recover to pre-pandemic levels this year. However, the bright spots are in areas like passenger-to-freighter conversions and cybersecurity as governments and enterprises ramp up their focus on protecting their IT and OT infrastructure. Our defense business continues to bring stability to the group. We target to offset the lower government grants in 2021 through our ongoing cost reduction initiatives and partial business recovery and low impairments in the areas which Cedric has already touched on earlier on. With our new organization structure, we're well positioned to better serve our customers, respond nimbly to macroeconomic changes, and poised to achieve long-term sustainable growth. In keeping to our commitment to continue returning value to our shareholders despite near-term aberrations, our board has proposed a final dividend of 10 cents per share. When approved by the shareholders, the total dividend will be 15 cents per share for the full year 2020. On that note, I've finished my prepared remarks. I will open the floor for Q&As. Yes, Hong Han.
Hi, hello everyone, and a very happy Lunar New Year. I'm Hong Han from COSA. I have three questions here. The first is regards to the guidance of 100 million job support scheme in 2021. Can I check if this number has reflected the recent job support scheme given by Singapore government? I ask this question because I do recall in November 3Q briefing last year, the guidance for 2021 support scheme will reach 100 million. However, this number appears similar even after the recent support scheme from Singapore side. Second question in regards to the 315 million support scheme received last year. Is management able to provide some clarity with regards to the different segments that received the incentives? And my last question is the 1 billion order book cancellation and adjustments. Is management able to provide segmental breakdown, and how do you see this rate of cancellation or adjustments going into 2021? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let me take you to the first question. The government grant that we show on the slide is not all in Singapore. It's Singapore and overseas. There are some rounding. So we have taken the most recent tranche of GSS into consideration, but rounding errors, or rather rounding up-down, results in still about 100 million. Or rather, I think it's more important to focus on the difference between the 2 years, 2020 and 2021, a difference of about $250 million. But that's net of government grants in locations that we operate. Of course, Singapore is one of the main locations. We will not provide a breakdown in terms of segment, but suffice to say that aerospace, because of the industry that we are in, did receive a high share of the GSS support, as well as other government support around the world, as we should be familiar with. The $1 billion cancellation of order book is primarily in the aerospace sector. Yes, Terence.
Hi, management. Thanks for having me. I have two questions. How much of the 4Q20 contracts that were deferred went to Jan 2021? And the second question is, can we assume that the bulk of right-sizing that you all will do this year will come from the aerospace and marine segment? And if so, what's the split? Thank you.
Yeah. First of all, your first question, we don't really focus a lot on quarterly swings in order book, and you know, we have been articulating that for a very, very long time. I think ultimately what's important is that our order book is still at a very robust level,
at the end of 2020. So that gives us revenue visibility. But some of the contracts that we expected to secure in December did roll into January. I mean, in January, you will see some of our announcements in aerospace. But we will not get into the details of how much. I think in the continuum of business, I think it's more important to look at the overall picture of our order book that's still at a very robust level. The right sizing that we conducted is mainly in 2020. The benefits will flow through 2021. It's carefully thought through, considering what is required for our business that operates in diverse industries, our respective business demands and needs, as well as business outlook, according to how we're impacted by the pandemic. So I won't be able to give you a breakdown, but we did most of the, in fact, all the right sizing that we talked about in 2020. What we look forward to is a recovery of the market conditions in 2021. In a way, we are hopeful that there will be a recovery. And we also hope that when there is a stronger than expected recovery, we can rechannel some of the resources back to grow the business, reinvest, so to speak, our resources to pursue new growth as the market recovers. But we're well positioned right now because of the productivity steps that we have taken in 2020. So we start off 2021 on a strong footing. Okay. Ajit.
Hi, Ajit from UOB Kay Hian. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Several questions from me. One, you about the order book. You secured a 5-year maintenance contract from a U.S. carrier, I believe, and I was wondering whether this is fully reflected in the current order book or do you recognize it partially, say, for 1 year or so? So that's my first question. Second question is with regards to Forex losses. Cedric, perhaps if you could help me understand in terms of the hedge, the current hedging exposure, and also if you could provide me with sensitivity in terms of US dollar changes. Third question is regards to contract liabilities. Notice a significant increase in the contract liabilities. Could you share whether or not it's related to M&A or whether it's because of organic growth? Lastly, on MRAS, could you share with us on to what extent it was impacted, if it's possible, because of COVID-19, at least in terms of revenue, and also whether MRAS will be affected by the U.S. government's imposition of a 15% tariff on Airbus? So these are my questions. Thanks.
Cedric, perhaps on the order book, 5-year maintenance, how we recognize, I can leave it to you. And as well as the Forex losses, contract liability, basically that's advance payment. Yeah. And then MRAS question, I'll leave it to Jeff to address. Okay.
Cedric. So, first of all, we have a very disciplined way of hedging Forex exposure. On the cash flow, through cash flow hedges, basically pure, plain vanilla forward contracts. So if our first action is try to negotiate with the customers to have a natural matching and natural hedge. I mean, if we have a contract that requires US dollar supplies, we will try to have the payments in US dollars. So that's the first action. But in some cases, you cannot achieve that, so there's a difference. Then we will forecast going forward what is that difference. And in our case, we are basically long US dollars for our business, and then we will buy forward contracts to sell US dollars. And we do so in a wedge basis, starting from this point in time to 3 years out, in a wedge, a declining wedge basis, because when you reach into the outer years, what you will see is that actually your forecasting error become larger than your FX movement error. So I think that's a good policy to adopt. The after having adopted those policies, and we do so for all major currencies, you will find that the unhedged portion and the impact on the bottom line is very small in the context of the group's net profit. So in single-digit millions at most. Now, but in the financial results for this year, you will see there's a Forex loss of about 19 million or so. Unfortunately, this is where accounting conventions didn't catch up with economics. What happened is that the Treasury Center, we have centralized our treasury operations. I think it's a good thing to do because you do not want different segments to take care of their hedging requirements without netting them off centrally, because you really only want to hedge the net position and exposure to the group. So this Treasury Center actually lends money, US dollar money, to several US functional currency businesses like our US entity, Stena, and some of our aviation asset management entity. And because in 2020 the US dollar actually depreciated, so the loan asset on the Treasury Center would record a loss that goes straight to P&L. But because the two entities mainly, Stena and the aviation asset entities, are US dollar functional currencies, the FX movements goes to OCI. So actually there's no movement because they're US dollar and US dollar movement. But when they consolidate as a group, those movements go to OCI. So there's an equivalent offset in OCI versus the P&L impact on the treasury business. So that is why there's an accounting impact, but it doesn't negate our hedging policies, which we believe are still very effective. On the contract liabilities, the increase is largely due to advances. So as I have explained on our current assets, advances has gone up. No, it's not related to M&A.
Recognition. Okay. The EMRA's impact by COVID-19, the OEMs have announced a reduction in aircraft deliveries of between 40 to 60% today versus pre-COVID. So you can expect that as a major supplier of components to OEMs, we would see an impact in that range, okay? And as the OEMs announce a gradual increase in aircraft deliveries, then we should see a gradual recovery in EMRA's deliveries and revenue. As for the U.S. government tariffs on the sale of aircraft, those tariffs are really for the sale of the whole aircraft. So in terms of component, spare parts, material supply, there are no additional tariffs on these parts. So there is no impact on us. Yeah.
I think I missed out a question on order book recognition. So I think Ajit gave an example of the five-year contract with a major U.S. carrier, MRO, that we have won. We call that type 2 contract because the contract is basically over a five-year period, and it depends on how much arising, how much shop visits that the particular contract entails year on year. So in those cases, we just take 1 year. We estimate how much is the 1 year's arising, and we take the 1 year value into the order book. But when we have a contract that is the volume of the business is fixed, then we'll take the full amount.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Silky, please go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, on aerospace, can you actually elaborate on the impairment of assets? Is it only, or rather, why is EMS in the loss? Is it because of impairment? Or is there any other impairments in other category? Do you want me to actually go through all the questions? Okay, so that's on aerospace. And also, aerospace contract win in the last quarter, you mentioned that you have actually seen some strength in the PTF, but can you actually split or rather just educate us on how good is the outlook in PDF or how much contract that you won in 4Q was PDF or aerospace. And also for marine, I understand that you said that there are some project losses, but how should we actually look at it going ahead? And also provision for owner's contract, how much is it in total that you have actually provided for this year for the group?
Can you repeat that question?
Provisions for owner's contract.
Yeah. And also for dividend, I mean, you have been very generous this year. Looking forward, should we actually expect, you know, if you manage to actually control your costs, et cetera, this is what we should actually expect. And finally, the new financial reporting segment, you will only do EBIT for two segments and then revenue for all sub-segments. Is that right?
Okay. Maybe on impairment of assets and new financial reporting, we can let Cedric address those two questions. And then for Marine, Seng Chan can help us walk through. And then for the house, the strength of the PTF business, I'll get Jeff to talk about it. I'll talk about dividend first. Huh? The message has not changed. We have enough retained earnings to help us ride through any aberrations in the industry. We look at dividend over the long term. We ask our investors and shareholders to look at our track record. But that's only one way for us to return value to shareholders. And obviously, dividend is all subject to shareholders' approval, but we continue to see that as an important lever for us to return value to our investors and shareholders. As our track record would show, in the last 8 years, we have maintained our dividend at 15 cents per share. And as our presentation material showed you, we have close to 45 cents, 44.9 cents of retained earnings at the group level at the end of last year. So we are sufficient in terms of our ability to buffer any short-term aberrations in the industry. And I think that's the message that we've been sharing with our shareholders and the investment community over the last few years.
Okay. Yeah, on the impairment of 54 million and fair value changes of associates, Suki, the bulk of it will be in aerospace, yeah, because that's the sector that's most affected by COVID, and therefore some of the intangibles and goodwill associated to different businesses in aerospace have been impaired according to the accounting, I guess, DCF model of the value in use versus the carrying value. Yeah. In terms of provisions, this is not called out in the bar charts, but it's actually put together with the slide where we talk to how we're going to offset the $250 million difference. Again, I think the bulk of the provisions are also from aerospace sector. Yeah, and it's basically double-digit millions. Yeah. Your other question is segment reports. I think we will have three segments, not two segments, and we will report for the segments, revenue, of course, and EBIT as newly defined, yeah, which is profit from operations. It's a sum of the profit from operations plus non-operating income plus income from associates and JVs. Only for sub-segments, the nine sub-segments, where we will stop at the revenue line. Yeah.
May I ask Jeff to talk about PTF? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for your continued interest in PTF. Maybe a good way to share with you the demand is that last year we inducted over 10 aircraft to convert across the A320, 321, 330, and the Boeing 767 lines. This year we will be inducting more than 30 aircraft. So that's 10 to 30, okay? And then next year, we will be inducting over 40 aircraft. So we're seeing a significant ramp up in demand. As a result, we are increasing capacity across our global network, where last year we had 3 lines and we added 1 line. And this year, from 4 lines, we're adding 4 additional lines. So we're going to have a total of 8 production lines by the end of the year. We continue to see increasing interest, and we're fully booked through the end of 2022. So any new customer would have to book into 2023. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. May I get Sing Chan to address the question on U.S. operations for Marine?
Yeah. I'd like to thank Suki as well for the continued interest in Marine. As you are all aware, we appointed a new CEO in VT Holden Marine in June 2020. So in the last 6 to 7 months, the CEO has been very preoccupied with reviewing the projects, reviewing the operations, putting in place improvement measures, investing in CAPEX to derive productivity savings in the current projects as well as the projects in the pipeline, which explains why you see the numbers that you saw. The project, if you remember, we had the QLNG articulated tug barge. The delivery experienced a little problem. We took a bit longer to deliver that pair of LNG bunkering vessel. It was expected to be delivered in September, but we only managed to deliver it at the end of of 2020. So the CEO is also, with all the reviews, with all the improvements in the processes, he's also very preoccupied with trying to renegotiate contracts with options which have expired. But at the same time, with the benefit of all the lessons learned from the current projects, he's also negotiating new contracts for 2021 and beyond. Caveat is really, as you know, this is large-scale engineering, so it can be quite binary. We have indirect costs. We're provisioned for some soft sales in 2021. So depending on when the soft sales come in, the ability to allocate so-called indirect cost overheads to this project may differ depending on when the projects come in.
Maybe we'll... Hi. Hui, okay, Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I've got kind of 2 questions that are relating to the same topic. So the questions actually revolves around the quality of the contract wins that was shared. Of course, the quality of the order book ex-PTF. Of course, in an environment like this, I want to understand, right, the state of the... competitive forces out there in terms of customers coming back to talk about pricing for contracts previously signed, as well as the pressure, right, coming from what is actually a very underutilized sector, right, in many of the areas that you participate in. So really around, what we can see, right, for the margins for the order book that will kind of turn into revenue, right, over the next 12, 24 months. Thank you.
Yeah, this question was asked at the last quarter. Same question. As a business, we look at our pricing very carefully. We are not trying to just buy contracts by pricing artificially low. No, I think we need to be price competitive, but at the same time, we've got to make sure that our projects are profitable. And PTF is not on the standalone, because with PTF, oftentimes it comes with MRO business and it's a package deal. So that gives it some support. So we continue to be very diligent in the way that we manage our business and our contract proposals. So I won't really say that there's any significant difference this time. Of course, competition is keen, but at the same time, we also have other value proposition. It's not just price. It's quality, great ability, commitment to customers, turnaround time, things like that. Which is why even our Singapore MRO operations, even before COVID-19 hit, has always been competitive, even against some lower cost locations, so to speak. So, I mean, that's what we've been doing. We invest also in productivity tools to reduce our cost base, but at the same time, we also focus on our value proposition to customers in various other areas.
Okay, we will take one more question from the room before we move on to our webcast participants. Yes, Xiu Hui, please.
Xiu Hui.
What is the whole amount of the contract that you managed to secure last year, if including the marine and also the land system sectors? And the second question would be, what is the target of the order book are you looking to secure in the financial year 2021? And third question would be, are you expecting to see any signs of rebounds in terms of the outlook of the revenue in financial year 2021?
We do not disclose other new contract wins apart from aerospace and electronics for customer confidentiality reasons. But those order book, those new contract wins would have manifested in the overall order book. So obviously we also won contracts in land systems and in marine as well, but we generally do not disclose for confidentiality reasons. We do not also set a target for order book. As I mentioned at the results briefing over the last few years, we continue to be competitive in the marketplace, winning new contracts. Even in a year where we are besieged by COVID-19, we ended our year with a slightly higher order book than 2019. We will continue to work on securing new contracts. We do not put a target order book in front of all of us. Of course, internally, we have our own financial metrics and targets, but we do not disclose that. But if you look at our order book record in the last few years, we continue to build relatively good momentum. Okay. Do we expect a rebound in 2021? I think there will be partial recovery. We think that there will be partial recovery in 2021, which is why in our waterfall chart that shows you how we bridge the lower government grant to be expected this year, there's a bar that shows the effects of partial recovery and the absence of impairment, and of course partial recovery contributed to that bar of $70 million, and we hope we are going to watch the space very closely, and if there's higher recovery, obviously we'll benefit from it, and we'll invest or reinvest resources to pursue those growth. We have a long-term strategy. While COVID-19 has given us some near-term impact, our long-term objectives have not changed. We still are positive about the aerospace business. In the meantime, while we are in the difficult situation, we have to continue to focus on cost management so that we are better prepared when the recovery becomes stronger. We do see some gradual recovery for now, but we will continue to watch the space to make sure that we focus on the areas that we can control, especially in the area of cost management.
Thank you, Vincent. Yeah. We have Rahul waiting on the line. Rahul, thank you for your patience. Your line is unmute. Would you mind going ahead and ask your question, please?
Hey, hi. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Rahul. Perfect. Thank you. Hi. Happy New Year to everyone. I have a few questions. My first question is that related to smart cities business. So due to COVID-19, we are seeing structural change of people working from home, and in many countries moving to tier 2 cities. How do you see it impacting the demand of smart cities business? My second question is, if it's possible, could you please share with us rough split of contribution from government support in first half of 2020 versus second half 2020? My third question is for the aerospace division. Could you share with us the contribution to overall profit from MRAS and EFW? Also, if you can indicate the level of profit contribution from the P2F business. My fourth question is related to the cost savings measures. Could you please share more details about the split of $180 million and how much of it, you know, and how was the progress in 2020 related to it? My final question is related to EV side. So in the budget, the government laid emphasis on electric vehicles, which involves setting up of charging stations. Is it something that you would intend to participate in or you're looking forward to? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your question. I will perhaps let Ravi talk about the smart city opportunities as a result of some of the structural changes, work from home. We do not, on your second question, we do not get into the details of split between, you know, first half and second half government support. Suffice to say that, you know, we've showed you the full year government support. I will let Jeff talk about the contributions on MRAS, from MRAS and passenger to freighter conversion. The details of the $180 million of cost reduction and productivity measures, we do not want to get into the details, but we are confident that we are, you know, that we will be able to achieve, which is why we presented the slide earlier on to you. And many of the productivity gains or measures and cost reduction steps have already been taken in 2021, so the benefits would flow through for the full of many of the steps have been taken in 2020, so we expect the full benefits for many of the initiatives to flow through for the full year of 2021. And of course, if there's a stronger than expected recovery, then these cost reduction measures will also have to be adjusted along the year so that we can reinvest our resources or invest more resources to capture profitable growth. So that's how we look at this. For EV charging, and obviously it's a new frontier for us, and under our Urban Solutions Group, we do have a smart mobility division that's looking at how we can, you know, capitalize on this trend. More to come, but we certainly we're looking and evaluating how we can participate in this nascent but soon to be growing sector. Okay, be it electric vehicle or, you know, charging infrastructure. As you know, we delivered the first 20 electric vehicle bus, EV bus. So we are already participating in the sector, but we want to see how much more we can do in the years ahead. Okay. Jeff, would you like to talk about the...
You know, we Middle River and EFW are both very significant contributors to aerospace, both in the OEM business and EFW in particular in the MRO business. So I would say that they are very important components. However, in 2020, it was a very challenging year for both areas, OEM and MRO. Okay, so certainly we look forward to better contribution in 2021. I think we really should focus on opportunities, and I would say that for Middle River, we have very good opportunities in delivering for the Airbus 320 aircraft nacelle. We are also working actively with the Chinese COMAC on the delivery of the C919, the ARJ nacelles. In addition, we are seeing startup PTF lines in EFW. We're seeing EFW looking at new areas to use the composite panels that today we only use on aircraft. I mean, we're looking at other areas of applications for composite panels. So we're looking forward to a better contribution from both very important subsidiaries.
Thank you, Jeff. Robin.
Thank you for a question on smart city. So first, let me say that the trend, the technology trend of working from home, digitization, cloud, 5G, IoT, is very, very strong, including robotics and automation. So this trend is very strong, and we are seeing this across the world, and we continue to see this momentum. what we are seeing is that a lot of this is not just being done in the first-tier cities, but also being done in the second-tier, smaller cities, as well as in the state. So good example is our IoT solution. If you recall, we talked about telematics winning contracts in the U.S., in some of the big states, actually, to provide smart street lighting solutions. So this will continue. In our train business as well, there are still many, many cities that have only just begun to embark on the MRT equivalent of train systems. And we see the momentum. In fact, if you recall some of the wins we announced last year, we continue to see a lot of momentum, both in the road business as well as in the rail business. And as long as I think the global economy continues and both the government budgets and the commercial budgets are there, I think this trend of digitization, automation, will continue. And therefore, the opportunities for the smart city business will remain strong as we move forward.
Thank you, Ravi. We have three more participants waiting online.
Three?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Peg Gig from Business Times. Your line is being unmuted. Please go ahead and raise your question. Peg Gig, are you with us?
Happy New Year. Can you hear? Happy New Year.
Peg Gig, hi.
Hello.
Happy New Year to
yes.
you. We hear you very well. Please go ahead.
Happy New Year, Peg Gig.
Yes. Happy New Year, Vincent. I have two questions. The first question relates to the results presentation deck. Maybe you would like to refer to slide 32. For under electronics, right, so there's this mention of unfavorable sales mix. And then if you were to refer to slide 38, under land system, there's also a mention of unfavorable product mix. So will you please elaborate and also on what ST Engineering is going to do about these? That's my first question. Okay, then the second question, right? Just now Jeff mentioned that ST Engineering will be inducting 30 aircraft this year and another 40 aircraft next year. So I was wondering if these customers would be able to walk away from these orders when air travel demand picks up and the belly full capacity comes back. Because and also because some forwarders, they're actually looking at alternatives to air freight. So the demand for passenger to freighter conversion might be impacted as a result. So these are the two questions from me. Thanks.
Maybe we can let Jeff talk about the first question, the second question on the, yeah.
Very simple. So quick one. When customers place an order with us, they actually need to put a down payment. Okay, so it's a commitment of their intent, and therefore if they walk away, they will have to forego their down payment. Based on the current trend of interest, we really don't believe that customers will walk away. In fact, we hear a lot more complaints from customers that they want an earlier induction slot and they cannot get it. So, I mean, if any customer really does walk away, then we will be very confident we can resell the induction slots. Thank you.
That the demand for all freighters is very high, and this is also driven by e-commerce. And in fact, if anything, you know, work from home, COVID, and some part of it would continue post-COVID. And e-commerce is a trend that, you know, I think is not reversible, even if it is after COVID. Yeah.
Okay.
On the unfavorable sales mix. So on the chart, it shows that our revenue was down 2%, but PBT was up 6%. And and what we mean by unfavorable sales mix is that because we provide products and solutions, we do system integration and also have services, the margins for each one of these businesses is different. And when we look at half-yearly comparison or yearly comparison, occasionally, right, the margins of our business may fluctuate over time, and it's because of the mixture of the businesses that are sort of delivering are coming to a completion at that point of time. But if you look at the charts we've given you in terms of the margins, generally for most of our business we have maintained the margins, or their side dropped because of COVID. But generally for the electronics sector, we've been able to maintain the margins.
Yeah. Xianglong, would you talk? Yeah, Land Systems.
Just add on the Land System. You know that the Land System, we have a range of products and services. So it ranges from the vehicle, and even for the vehicle, we have many types of vehicle, and we also support the local and also overseas customer. Same thing for the services. We also do a range of maintenance for all sort of vehicle, and we have weapons and as well as ammunition, 40mm and also large caliber. So it depends on the project delivery during that time, and also we have a different profit margin for the different product mix and also services. So that is why it is a simpler way of encompassing and provide an overview of exactly what is the mix for the profit margin that we are talking about.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, what are we doing about it at the ST Engineering level? I think because we have a diverse portfolio of businesses, there will always be, ebbs and flows in terms of the relative contribution by different business lines, different product types, and therefore the margin mix. We don't believe that's anything of concern at this time. Obviously, we continue to watch our margins, but we believe that this is just our normal run of the business that would ebb and flow, which is the strength that we have, because we are not overly reliant on one particular sector or segment because of our diverse portfolio. So we'll continue to watch this space, but it's not something that we are concerned at this time.
Thank you, Vincent.
Caroline. Thank you for your question, Peggy.
We have Caroline from Channel News Asia that is waiting on the line. Caroline, your line is unmuted. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Everyone, I have three questions. Firstly, it's on the PTF conversion. So is it right to say that the aim of the PTF conversion program is to initiate the process of an aircraft modification center? Would you be able to clarify that? And to what extent are you using the spare capacity left by passenger sector for this pivot in terms of manpower and resources for it? And the third point is, how has this PTF helped to make up the shortfall left by the passenger sector? So that's on PTF. And the second question is on the new orders contracts. Is it right to say that new orders contracts mostly come from the aerospace and electronic sector? The financial statement also stated defense and public safety and security as well. I wanted to get the sense on the proportion of which sectors are the new orders mostly coming from, the demand. And the third question is on the recovery outlook for the group's different business sectors, aerospace, electronics, marine and land systems. What is a group's strategy to position itself in response to this recovery outlook? Thank you.
I'll invite Jeff to talk about the PTF, and then we'll cover the other two shortly.
Okay. Currently, we have a global network of airframe maintenance facilities, and we're seeing at the moment capacity utilization of between 40 to 90%. Okay. So you can see it's a very big range across different geographies. Therefore, in our consideration of where to put PTF capacity, we also look at where we might have additional capacity going forward. And the point about passenger aircraft not being inducted and therefore leaving additional capacity is very correct. So we are very thankful that we have very loyal freight customers who have continued to provide us additional MRO work on freight aircraft. In addition, we have the PTF conversions kicking in, absorbing some of the capacity. So we will be looking at filling up capacity across the world. And if one day we should run out of capacity, then we might be working with partners where we might have arrangements to license the PTF conversion work. Right. So we are obviously looking at the demand and then adjusting the supply of capacity to meet the expectations of customers. Yeah. In terms of recovery outlook, I think it's obviously a number of uncertainties at the moment, despite the introduction of vaccines. Very importantly, we're looking towards international passenger traffic growing, and that would mean that national authorities have to adopt a travel framework for people who are already vaccinated, and we're not seeing that yet. So we are hopeful that in the coming months, as more people get vaccinated, we will see travel protocols being established across the world to enable people who are vaccinated to travel safely and easily. So certainly by the end of 2021, we are extremely hopeful that the situation will be much better than where we are today.
We do provide new orders for aerospace and electronics, but we also secured new orders in the land system sector as well as marine sector, except that we do not disclose for customer confidentiality reasons. The net effect of these new order wins was that we ended, just repeating a point that I made earlier on, we ended up with the year with a slightly higher order book than 2019. And that's despite about $1 billion of order cancellation. So I think our contract win pipeline continues to be robust. In terms of recovery, we mentioned it's going to be uneven. Aerospace, we are seeing gradual recovery. It won't go back to the pre-COVID level by this year. We don't think so. But we are seeing signs of recovery, and hopefully with the vaccines that are widely deployed, hopefully, pace can speed up and there will be travel protocols established between countries that will help the aviation industry, but we're watching that space closely. But the recovery is not expected to go back to the pre-COVID level, at least not this year. As we mentioned, smart city, we are seeing signs of good momentum, good growth, as Ravi mentioned. So that is a bright spot for us. Urban solutions, smart city, Internet of Things, continue to give us good traction. Defense business is very rock steady, and it gives us the stability to weather the market aberrations. As we have demonstrated in 2020, defense will continue to be a very important piece of our business going forward. And for us, for Marine, of course, we had some challenges in terms of the U.S. operations, but we're putting a lot of effort to strengthen the operations. So Seng Chan and his team have been working very hard on this. So we hope to continue to focus, and we will continue to focus on delivering the outstanding projects, including the Polar Security Cutter, which is still, profitable at this time. Now, how are we positioning ourselves for recovery? Well, we have done quite a few things in 2020 in reducing our cost base, implementing productivity measures so that when the market recovers, we'll be in a very strong position to benefit from the upside. I also mentioned in the third quarter update that despite the near-term challenges posed by COVID-19, we continued our reorganization work, and we are now under the new organization that better positions us to achieve our long-term strategy of strengthening our base business while pursuing growth in smart city and the international defense business. So throughout the 2020, we were busy not only taking cost reduction and productivity measures while keeping our employees safe, but we also took a lot of effort and time to reorganize ourselves so that we are better prepared and better set up to benefit from any upturn that will come from now on.
Thank you, Vincent.
We
have Mr. Goh, a member of the public that is waiting on the line. Mr. Goh, thank you very much for your patience. Your line is unmuted. Please go ahead and ask your question. Mr. Goh, your line is now on unmute. Please unmute your line to ask your question. Okay, while Mr. Goh tried to unmute his line, perhaps we can move on to Mr. Ng Jun Jie. I believe he is also a member of the public. Mr. Ng Jun Jie, your line is now unmuted. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Vincent. Hi, Cedric. This is Sean from JP Morgan. Thank you so much for the presentation. So I got three questions. One is about cybersecurity. You mentioned earlier there's an increasing growth area. Do you mind if you could share a little bit on this, potentially on a revenue contribution, as well as what kind of specific projects are they looking at? Is it Singapore or is it overseas? The second is on impairment loss. Do we expect any further impairment loss for this financial year, 2021, on the back of the slower than expected recovery trajectory? The last question is on the competitive landscape for both aerospace and electronics. Do you mind if you could share a little bit more about the P2F as well as the MRO outlook, specifically how SDE right now is a better position compared to its peers? And specifically in the electronics business, you acquired NewTek as well as Glowlink. How are we thinking about the growth trajectory for the next 2 years? Thank you.
Yeah, for the cybersecurity question, I'll invite Ravi to address an impairment possibilities in 2021 for Cedric to address that question, and then for Jeff and Ravi to talk about the competitive landscape for PTF, MRO, as well as our SATCOM business, NewTek, Glowlink, and the growth projection. Maybe we start with Ravi. Yeah.
So let me address the question on cybersecurity. So we continue to actually have significantly new opportunities in cybersecurity. So just to share that in terms of the wins this year compared, or the wins in 2020 compared to 2019, the team actually won more than twice that's a number, but also the value of the order. So there's many good opportunities. Specifically, in terms of the areas that we are delivering in cyber, first is the area of cybersecurity operations center. So this is one of our key businesses. We have been very fortunate to be able to win projects to deliver cybersecurity op centers for many of the critical infrastructure verticals in Singapore. The other area is in providing secure systems for communications as well as for messaging. Again, this is another one of the areas where there's been significant demand because of the work-from-home requirements. We have had a few of these projects. We were able to win and to deliver to various customers. And the third area is in terms of cybersecurity products. So in Singapore, we're one of the few companies that actually deliver products both for commercial use as well as for government use, cybersecurity products to be used for purpose of encrypting communication. So that's the third area of business. This is also the business that we are looking to grow overseas because it's a lot more easier to take it internationally. So overall, the cybersecurity business did well in 2020, and we are looking forward to even more opportunities in 2021, and we hope that the demand continues and the cybersecurity business will grow.
Yeah, maybe we address the Ravi on the third question on competitive landscape for NewTek acquisition, Glowlink acquisition. Okay. What's the growth trajectory outlook? Yeah.
So let me address that question. So first of all, after the acquisition of NewTek, which is now called iDirect Europe, and Glowlink, we have fully integrated both companies into our iDirect business, global business. So that is done, and I think we have the team has done a good job in doing the integration. The SATCOM industry was quite significantly hit by COVID, I think, in three areas. One, in the aerospace area, naturally, there's a slowdown of, in fact, production of aircraft and sale of aircraft. So that's affected us. The second area is the maritime cruise business also affected, so affected SATCOM business. And the third area is actually in terms of live sporting event, which is one of the areas where we provide a lot of solution to many of the major events around the world. So overall, although from a revenue point of view, we've done, compared to the previous year, I would say, we have grown But we had expected a much more significant growth. But because of the COVID-19 impact, our expectations were not met simply because of the slowdown. But moving forward, we do feel that as global travel recovers, as you know, the businesses around the world begin to recover, the demand for the satellite communications will improve and will increase naturally. And I think the industry itself is growing dynamically. There are a lot of new constellations either being launched or planned to be launched. So we see this as a growth area. And we believe that although this has slowed down our plans, we know that in the next couple of years, the momentum will grow. And we are in a good position, having acquired and integrated well both Newton and Growlink. We're in a good position to ride on this growth and to deliver value to the company.
Thank you, Ravi. When we made the acquisition of NewTek, now iDirect Europe, we mentioned that we expect it to be accretive in year two. But because of COVID-19, we came in just about break-even versus it being accretive. You know, didn't meet what we originally set up to do, but long-term prospect is good. And it's in line with our strategy to further invest in smart city. And in this case, SATCOM is in the connectivity space. So over the long term, we're still very positive about this space. In the short term, it is certainly impacted by COVID-19, especially in the aviation and maritime sector. On the PTF side.
Okay. Very broad question. Thank you. In terms of competitiveness, the commercial work we win is all won from third-party customers. So we do not have a parent airline to work with, and therefore it is very imperative that we always benchmark ourselves against the market, against competition, to see how we can position ourselves to win. And therefore, the key approaches for us is really, firstly, capacity, secondly, capability, and thirdly, in terms of partnership. So, and we've announced in the past that we continue to build capacity. As we speak, our live hangar building project in Pensacola, Florida, continues to be developed, and we are looking to break ground in the second quarter of this year, despite the crisis, because we are building for the long term, and we are building to support our customers in these great loyal relationships. In Asia, we continue to look at additional capacity as well, in partnership with various parties. Secondly, I talked about capability, and today we talk a whole lot about PTF capability. In addition, Vincent talked about our nacelle MRO capability. We are also looking to build up our aviation leasing portfolio, where we see an opportunity not just in passenger aircraft, but also in freighter aircraft, especially at this time where we have asset values going down due to COVID temporarily. So we see a great opportunity here. Thirdly, I talked about a partnership, and here we continue to work in partnership with OEMs and with airlines and with other parties to build the kinds of businesses, the kinds of programs that will make us successful, whether it's in an aircraft program, a system component program, or an MRO program. So in every way, we are looking to position ourselves to be even more competitive coming out of COVID. Today, we are known as an integrator that has very full value stream capabilities across design, engineering, assembly, MRO, financing, and end-of-life solutions. So we are known to be an integrator, a third-party independent integrator, and I think that positions us well to offer solutions and options to customers. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll let Cedric address the impairment question.
Sean. Thanks for the question. Impairment testing is an activity that we do regularly. Basically, it's to discount the future cash flow of a particular line of business and compare that to the value in use of the cash-generating unit. So, for example, discount rate or terminal growth rate
or factors that is unique to a particular CGU may affect impairments. But Citrus Parables, the fact that we're expecting a partial recovery in the environment would mean that we would be facing much less impairment this year than 2020.
Okay. Thank you. Is Mr. Ng, Mr. Goh on the line?
Mr. Goh Ho Soon, your line is open. Would you like to raise your questions? Mr. Goh Ho Soon?
No, I don't have any question. I did not ask to speak on this.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Goh.
Thank you.
Yes, Rachel.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Happy New Year. Sorry, one second. Yes. Thank you for elaborating on how you plan to make up for the lost government savings. That was a very helpful slide. And on that note, why do you not want to give details about the productivity improvements and cost saving initiatives? That is one question. The second question is, given that you are reorganizing your segmental reporting, will you be hosting an investor day or capital markets day to update your guidance and outlook on each segment and subsector? Third question, was the increase in advances from customers coming from a single customer or multiple customers? And finally, the last question I have is for Jeffrey on the aerospace P2F program. The last A330 P2F conversion program, Sergi talked about the nose-to-tail learning curves. That was for a single location in Dresden. Coming up, you have multiple inductions in multiple locations. My question is probably going to be a little bit more convoluted in the sense that... how do you see the progress and profitability of this program, especially with inductions in so many locations and simultaneously? So, previously you talked about 4 to 6 aircraft being converted before you can achieve serial production. How should we be looking at this, given that you have 30 aircraft upcoming to be inducted? Yeah, that's for me. Thanks.
Yeah, I will take the first two questions on the details of the $180 million, as well as Investor Day, whether we have one. So the answer is yes, a very simple answer, yes. But I'll share a little bit more with you. And then for Cedric to take on the customer advances. And then the question on PTF, multiple lines, we'll leave it to Jeff. Let me just recap what we mentioned, are the constituents or... the components of the $180 million cost savings. It includes reduced manpower costs, productivity measures that would include things like areas like reduced contract labor, reduced outsourced contractors, retirement, natural attrition, reduced overtime that we did last year, actually. And these measures were taken across our global network, and it will be manifested in both cost of goods as well as OPEX. And because most of these items were taken in 2020 or initiatives taken implemented in 2020, it will flow through to 2021 for four-year effect. And some of these items, like productivity measures and resource reduction, are also intertwined. So we decided that it is not very meaningful to get into the various little small buckets. But suffice to say that we are confident of delivering the overall $180 million savings as a result of all these measures that we have taken. We'll continue to watch this space very closely, and we'll share more as we have more information throughout the year. But certainly we are confident of achieving the $180 million of savings, barring unforeseen circumstances. And also want to repeat the point that I made earlier on. If there's a stronger recovery than what we expect, then part of this cost reduction will have to go back into the business so that we can pursue more profitable growth.
We plan to have an Investor Day event again this year, likely in the second half of the year. We continuously review our business portfolio, keep testing our strategy, and we continue to do our own work. And in the second half of this year, we will want to plan for an Investor Day where we'll give you a more holistic sharing of how we see the business going forward, especially under the new organization structure. Okay.
Some advances from multiple customers, some more than others.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the very insightful question. Cuts at the work that we do as operations folks. We do have more lines to start up, more locations, and therefore the learning curve also applies across various locations. Now, the hope and expectation, of course, is because we've already had a significant learning curve for the first aircraft in any location, therefore that cross-learning can be shared with other locations so that they do not have to learn from scratch. Obviously, there will still be learning curve, but a smaller one. And one way for us to address that is to actually have teams that travel, teams that already have experienced on the first few aircraft to travel to these newer locations to support the startup of these other locations. And, you know, other than putting in place hangar capacity, there's a huge amount of work to be done across procuring the tooling, conversion material kits, getting the skilled manpower. So it's a whole host of production factors that you need to put in place at the right place, right time, in the right way to ensure that we can deliver well for our customers and be profitable ourselves. So indeed, it's an important point that we continue to work hard on in order to start up all these lines across the world. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Hong Han.
Hi, hello. I have just three quick questions here. The first is on the marine. If you look at the history of US of the marine business in the US, the geography there, it tends to have quite a long list of cost and execution issues. With a new CEO, how should investors look at the execution and delivery of the heavy-duty icebreaker, considering that this is one of the largest vessels to be built and he has a new design? Second question is, can we have an updated price with regards to each of the PTF conversions? My understanding some years back is that each of these PTF costs about a few million US dollars. Is this still the ballpark range that we are looking at? And the last question is the $70 million differences in terms of the partial business recovery and lower impairment. Is management able to provide a breakdown between the two? Thank you.
Yeah. The third question first. We're not going to give you a breakdown, but if you look at the partial recovery assumption that we have there, it's not. I think it's quite modest, even if there's no there's no repeat of lower impairment. But we know is the impairment will not be as much as 2020. But, you know, notwithstanding the case, the partial recovery that we're expecting is actually relatively modest, given the uncertainties in the market. We typically don't talk about price in any detail for competitive reasons and so forth, but I'll, you know, maybe have shared, Jeff touched a little bit on how the overall competitive landscape and customer focus are on PTF. In the US, yes, we have put in a lot of effort on the marine sector. As you know, I will let Seng Chan talk about a little bit more details, but the Polar Security Cutter project is a focus for us. It remains profitable at this time. And the way that the contracting is done is also different. There's a lot more customer participation upfront in the first 18 months to make sure that costs are well understood. And then in the second 18 months of detailed design, again, a lot of customer involvement. So it's not like the way that other projects are being managed. So the dynamics will be different, and obviously more customer involvement in terms of cost certainty is the differentiator. But I'll let Seng Chan perhaps share more with us. Seng Chan.
Vincent has touched on the key points as to why and how the Polar Security Cutter program is different from the rest of them. In addition to that, we have, together with the agencies, developed a plan to put infrastructure improvement in place to ensure that this particular project and vessel will be produced and manufactured differently from the ones before. I've earlier said that in the last 6 months or 7 months, the CEO has been busy reviewing the operations. So what he has done will certainly benefit the Polar Security program going forward.
Yeah. Jeff, you have anything more to add on PTF? Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you all for your interest. Well, there's no more questions from participants of the webcast. So I thank you all for all your questions. Thank you for taking time to be with us. Let me just maybe end by saying that 2020 was very challenging, but we've taken a lot of steps to strengthen and lower our cost base. We have also taken time to reorganize ourselves so that we can better achieve our long-term strategy, so that we are now well-positioned, continue to be well-positioned to capture long-term sustainable growth. So on that positive note, we'll end the results briefing today. Thank you very much for your attention. For those who join us from the webcast, thank you very much.
Thank you.